Hello, it's Paul Scott here. I'm talking to Traxys today. I've got the CEO and CFO, Don MacArthur and Max Cawthra on the line. Traxys, the ticker is TRCS, and the shares are currently £4.44 each, and that gives a market cap of about £120 million. I'm assuming that readers already know what the company does, so we won't cover that today. Now, I should also disclose, last year I did charge a fee, but today's interview I'm not charging a fee, it's a freebie. And also, I'm not currently a shareholder in the company, and we're not giving any recommendations or financial advice, so please do your own research. Okay, so hello John, hello Max.
Hi Paul.
Okay, shall we start off then? Your results for the year ending 31st of July came out yesterday. Now, Investec and WH Ireland have both put out notes saying that they were, reacting favourably to the results, that you beat expectations. So, do you want to outline the key points from yesterday's results?
Yeah, we can do. It was just another good year for the business. We improved in all our key metrics, so you can see from the numbers what happened. But revenue went up. Trading across the group was good. Two divisions traded really, really well, and our RCM division, in line with expectation, dropped back a bit, but there's reasons for that that we'll come on to. Profit was up. We made a number of key hires, which were really important for us to continue our growth. And it was just another, I think that's our sort of eighth or ninth year of consecutive double-digit growth. So it was a little bit uneventful, I suppose, in the financial year in terms of M&A, but post-year-end, there was also an investment that we made into a company called CityLogic, which is very important in terms of our technology base, and we'll come on to that, I guess, as well later on. And we also made the acquisition of a company called SEP Events. So it was a good year. I'm very happy with the results, and the business continues to thrive.
Yeah, and the cash pile has grown further. So, I mean, there's no question mark over your profits. The points I noted, you don't capitalise any development spending, do you?
No, not at all. No, we write it all off. So the only intangibles on the lease are acquired goodwill. And you're absolutely right. It's wrong. It's £13.3 million, and that's an increase of 4.4 on last year. So, yeah, the profits do convert to cash.
Yes. So the cash pile's over 10% of your market cap now, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it has gone down post year end. We have, we completed the acquisition of SEP and the investment in CityLogic, but it's still, at today's date, it's still over, well over £10 million. So,
yes.
Yeah, very, very strong position.
Okay, brilliant. So if we can touch on the remote condition monitoring business. I know in the past that's been, I think I'm right in saying, the most profitable element of the group.
Yeah.
Now, turnover dropped heavily. I believe from one of the broker notes that it was because there wasn't a framework contract in 2014-15. Could you sort of detail what's happened in that business?
Yeah, I think shareholders tend to focus a little bit too much on RCM, if I'm being honest. I mean, it's a fantastic division, and we supply hardware and software to allow typically rail companies to monitor, or sorry, rail infrastructure companies to monitor what's going on in their network, and then you can use that information to predict failure. So it's very interesting technology. It's very novel. It's not widely used out of the UK, so there's a big market. In terms of what you've seen in the numbers, we're on a framework agreement with Network Rail, and Network Rail procure, and they do their business planning over 5 years. So we're currently in what's called control period 5. And I suppose there's pros and cons. The good thing is they allocate their cash to those control periods, and we know broadly what they're going to spend, and we also know what our market share is because we're one of a couple of providers that work in that space. On the downside, Network Rail quite rightly don't care about our financial year. So the procurement can be slightly lumpy. We tend to get very big purchase orders. Last year, we had a number of those that landed within our financial year. This financial year, or rather the one that's just finished, there was only one significant one, but there was a lot of regional purchasing. And, you know, it is what it is. So I'm not worried about it because we always knew that that client was going to have lumpy revenue. The important thing to focus on is we are a preferred supplier and it's a five-year framework agreement. And there's not a hell of a lot more to say than that, I'm afraid, Paul. But the so what for that business is international expansion. So the big client, in terms of the big rail client, we already have in the UK, and that is a growing market, and there'll be other things to monitor. There's also other sectors to monitor, but in terms of the rail space, we are a key supplier. So the challenge for us has always been to try and expand internationally, and that's what we're doing. But taking a step back from RCM, I mean, the key thing to take away for shareholders is, although the thing to take away for shareholders in the year for that business, it was more than compensated for outside of RCM.
And yeah, well, that was going to be my next point, actually, because the rest of the business must have done really well to have not only taken up the slack, but to have increased
business that deals, that work in the transit. It's broken down in the numbers. Our software division doubled in size. So that was the full year impact of a business that we bought last year called Datasys, another niche technology business that deals, that work in the transport space. But it was also coupled with very good organic growth of our core software suite. So it doubled in size. And then the largest part of our business by revenue is our traffic and data services division. And they grew 25%, 24% in the year, and that was all organic. So there was no blurring of the lines of acquisitions or anything like that. It was just pure organic growth. And that's fairly typical. I mean, if you look back at our numbers, that's not unusual. And had RCM performed as it did last year or as it might do in a normal year, obviously the numbers would be that much stronger. But we're still happy where things ended up.
Yes, okay. And unless I missed it, I don't think I know you give turnover figures by division and by company.
We tend not to.
Stability by division, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, we don't deliberately, because it might be slightly emotive with some customers.
I see.
we tend not to do that.
Yes, okay, fair enough. What's next? Yes, we touched on the acquisitions before. Do you want to give us a little bit more colour on those?
Yeah, I mean, Traxys has always put itself in the shop window as a company that has really good, strong organic growth, but the story is an aggregation play as well. So when we came to market, we had one technology product that was very, very niche, but it was very profitable. And the reason that we came to market was to use a sort of PLC footing to which to reinvest those profits and buy and build other niche technology offerings. So, I mean, and that's, you know, that's what we do. That's what I spend a lot of my time doing, and that's what Max spends a lot of his time doing, is looking at other businesses that might be worthwhile looking at and maybe doing a deal with. So, and that's what the cash pile's there for. So, I mean, bear in mind, we've only ever raised less than £4 million on AIM. We're quite unusual in that respect. So there was no deals in the year. We looked at an awful lot of deals. We came very close to buying a company that we'd have loved to have acquired, but we pulled out at the sort of 11th hour. We didn't think it was right. And we are quite speculative. We're very, very speculative. We're pretty discerning about what we buy. But the model's there. The model's kind of unchanged. There's a section on our website that sort of lays out what we look for, how we approach evaluation, which tries to sort of, you know, narrow the pipeline so that we don't spend too much of our time with companies that are still sort of stuck in the 1990s. And, you know, it is what it is. SEP was a business that we bought post-year-end, and it did tick all of those boxes, and I'm really pleased that we came together with that business.
Yeah, now SEP Events, I think, has raised a few eyebrows. Some of the readers who submitted questions to me, which we'll come on to shortly, have sort of said, how does it seems to be a car parking marshalling business, you know, which I imagine is very low tech. So how does that fit with the rest of Traxys? Have you got visions to change it or develop it technologically, perhaps?
No, well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, I think people, shareholders need to focus on fundamentals like revenue and profit. And that's the first thing that we look at when we're looking at a business. Does it make money? Is it well run? Is it professionalized? You know, what's this business all about? So financially, it absolutely stacks up. The reason why we came together with them is that they did start off doing, the business started off doing event management parking back in sort of 20 years ago. But since then, they've broadened their footprint, and the reason why it's interesting to us is that they're specialists in traffic management, all aspects of traffic management and traffic planning, including car parking at events. But they also do the pre-planning in terms of, you know, road closures, communication routes, how many people are traveling through what roads to get to a specific event, and then also what's the customer interaction at the event, and then how do you get people home safely and happy. And that's a growth market. So the information that they have is interesting to us. The way in which they carry themselves, both in terms of, you know, the sort of frontline staff and the processes and technology that underpins them is really interesting to us. And there's also a lot of, there's very obvious cross-sell and upsell in terms of what we do with their customer base. So we don't do anything in the event world or the outdoor event world, but they are transport and traffic headaches. And so that's the interesting bit. That's the crossover in terms of our core business and SEP.
Yeah, it's a really good fit for our traffic and data services division. It's a natural bolt-on acquisition for them. It fits really well when you get into the what the traffic and data services team do and what SEP do. It's a logical deal for us.
Okay. And CityLogic looked interesting as well. This is the one where something to do with tracking people by their mobile phone signal or something, isn't it?
Anonymized, yeah. So if you look at what the traffic and data services business do, we carry out all manner of studies in terms of how pedestrians and vehicles move through an environment. And that ranges from, you know, looking at how many cars might be on the M25 at a given point in time, right through to looking at pedestrians walking through the Olympic Park, or all manner of studies in between. We deploy a range of technology that ranges from Wi-Fi and Bluetooth sensors that we deploy at the side of the roads, right through to ANPR cameras, so automatic number plate recognition cameras and software, or even people standing on street corners counting, but we don't tend to do so much of that. The panacea, if you like, is being able to collect data in a non-invasive manner where you've got limited or no cost of sale and you've got very high degree of accuracy of what you're counting. And the best way to do that is, for certainly for big projects, you know, wide geography projects, would be mobile phone data. So we've always wanted to get into this space because it's a natural progression of the technology footprint that we have, and it's a really interesting space to be in. But we don't have that data. We don't have access to that data, and we don't have the ability to, at the moment, to process that data because the data sets are enormous. CityLogic, on the other hand, is a company that does have access to that data. They've got a very unique relationship with one of the major telcos, but they don't have a deployment. They don't have a sales force, and we do. So we invested in them because we see them as having technology that is very important to us, and they were happy to have us on their register because we can hopefully sort of take that technology to market. And in a nutshell, what it does is we aggregate huge volumes of mobile phone data, and every time your mobile phone makes a call or logs onto Facebook or sends a text message or all number of apps are running in the background and your phone might speak to a base station a couple of thousand times a day, we're looking at the information and then working out when you move, when your phone picks up a different mast because it's always looking for the best signal it can find. We then interpret that data to map or plot where you are and how you're traveling. And it's fairly Big Brother stuff, but it's very interesting. We aggregate that data, so we're not looking at individuals, but then you can produce very interesting statistics and simulations and models on traffic and pedestrians.
Yeah, I can really see the potential for that. That brings us on, actually, to the first and I think probably the most interesting reader question, which is from a chap who calls himself Peter the Great on Stockopedia. And most of these people have sent in huge, great, long, rambling questions and statements more than anything. So I've had to sort of summarise them all.
No, it's okay. I read them last night in Stockopedia.
Oh, did you? Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
I did.
Well, the first one seems to be linking into the theme of driverless cars, which is
obviously
very, very much a growth area, the software, managing traffic flows. And that's clearly, you know, very relevant to what your whole group does, really. So, I mean, have you got any projects in that area, and do you see opportunities there?
We don't, and I don't know. That's the short answer. I mean, driverless cars is interesting, but I think fundamentally cars carrying one or two people in giant sort of, you know, tailbacks to get people to work is bonkers, completely bonkers. I mean, look at London. People don't drive to work. They take public transport. So I'm sure there will be opportunities for us in that area, but I don't know what they are yet. I mean, that technology is a long time away from fruition, and we tend to be market-led. I mean, we make no bones about that. We're not pious about technology, and we tend to sort of deliver stuff for our customers that they want and they'll pay for today, rather than try and sort of navel-gaze what's going to happen 10 years in the future.
Yeah, okay. Right, let's move on to the next one then from Simon, who is also on Stockopedia. He's, again, written a huge, long, rambling thing, but the summary of it is basically he's saying, is rationalisation of rail companies a threat to you? And also he names a number of large competitors and saying, do you see those as a threat?
I don't see rationalisation. I think rationalisation is a great thing. I mean, if the industry becomes smarter and wants to save money and it wants to become safer, they're only going to be able to do that with technology. If this is the same question, the chat was competition problems. So I can understand why he other products. Those are areas that don't overlap with that with us. We're not infrastructure management. We're to do
right.
Solving very clever resource optimization problems. So I can understand why he mentioned them, but we don't ever come into contact with IBM or the providers of these software. They don't play in our space, and we tend to avoid playing in their space.
yeah, I see.
But Network Rail and the UK rail industry is always undergoing massive change, and change for us tends to be really good. So, you know, 5 years ago, was it 5 years ago, when the Tories came to power, there was the comprehensive spending review, and all bets were off, and there was massive sort of supply chain disruption. We traded through that profitably, and we grew. And then there was the McNulty Value for Money study, and we traded through that profitably, and we grew. More recently, there's the Shaw report, which is looking at how Network Rail sort of saves money now that it's part of the UK books. And I would hope that we would trace through that and continue to grow. I don't think that we will ever see, I mean, my own view is I don't think that you'll see renationalisation. I think it'll actually go the other way. But to tell the truth, whatever happens, as long as people want to save money and increase efficiency and improve performance, that's where we play. So I would expect that we will make money either way.
Okay. And I mean, I saw the chart in your presentation about the growth in number of passenger journeys in UK rail. And I think a lot of people are not aware just to what an astonishing boom we've had in the last sort of, what is it, 10 or 15 years or something in rail travel. It's akin to the Victorian age, isn't it, in terms of growth rate?
It is. I wasn't allowed to use it in our presentation, but it's a renaissance of modern railways, apparently. I mean, you're right, people forget. I mean, people sort of hark back to privatisation, thinking it was great, but it wasn't great, it was pretty awful. And And it was also back when we were carrying less than half the amount of people that were carried today. So, you know, it's a growth area. Every year, even in the recession, you see passenger numbers growing between 5 and 7%. And provided that trend continues, there's some fairly horrible capacity and resource problems that come off the back of that.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got a very nice tailwind, really, being in this sector, haven't you?
I hope so, yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the next one, which actually sort of links into that in another way. It's from a chap called Denism, again on Stockopedia. And to summarise his question, he's really saying, have you saturated your current markets in remote condition monitoring and software? Is there now limited organic growth?
Well, you should see that from the numbers. I mean, the answer to that is no. Well, actually, I caveat that. For each of our products, so for example, the product that we took out of Leeds University that was commercialised, the first one that came to market, that product now is in use at almost every major train operating company in the UK. It's called TrainTrax, and it's a driver optimisation scheduling package. So, yes, that product is now, I wouldn't say saturated, but it's, you know, it can't double in size, but that's fine. It's one of maybe two or three dozen problems that train operating companies have within their planning and resourcing team, and we now have 10 software products. So each of those products is on its own journey, and the challenge for us, if you like, is to continue to solve new and interesting problems.
We've got new products coming out as well. One we've talked about is called Bugle Day One, so it's just an extension of an existing product called Bugle. So, yeah, the market for Bugle is, we've pretty much got that saturated, but Bugle Day One takes it on to another level. So we are growing organically, and there's still opportunities to do plenty of growth using the existing range, but just enhancing the product range, which is what we're working on.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, just the last question from Stockopedia from Ed Miller. He asks, oh, this is about your most recent acquisitions. He's saying, why did you fund them using equity and debt as well as cash when you've got such healthy cash balances?
Yeah, well, we didn't is the short answer. I think
okay.
I think he's misread the RNS. We did the deal. We invested X into that business in return for it was £1 million for 30%. But we put debt into that business. So we put our money part by way of equity, but part by way of debt. So City Logic...
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, so you'll account for it as an associate, presumably.
Right.
Yeah, I see.
So it was. I read that as well, and I sort of slapped myself in the forehead thinking we must have accidentally misled people. We are debt-free, and the only time that you see dilution in an acquisition, City Logic wasn't an acquisition, is when there's normally a chunk of equity that gets given to the management team by way of consideration to make sure it keeps them honest. So a typical deal might be, you know, 80 or 90% cash and then 10 or 20% of Trax's stock. But we remain debt-free. We always have been and we always will be.
Okay, that leads me on actually to one of my questions, which I think I asked you last year as well, so you'll probably slap your forehead again here. cringe anyway. I mean, are you being too cautious, John? You know, your cash pile is getting bigger and bigger, debt is readily available and is really cheap, you know, so is there not a case for making a game-changing acquisition, you know, £20 or £30 million acquisition, or funding some sort of ambitious startup perhaps?
Well, we'd like to think that we have funded an ambitious startup in City Logic. I don't know. I mean, you know, you deliver a good set of numbers and you do it 8 years in a row and people sort of ask you that question. And I suppose my question back is, what growth rate would you like to see? Because the steeper the curve, the higher the risk. I mean, Max and I are very sort of canny, conservative guys. We don't invest sort of willy-nilly because it's money that we haven't raised in the markets. It's you know, money that we had to work bloody hard for. I don't know, maybe we are being too conservative, but it boils down to your own individual risk profile. We have a very good pipeline of acquisitions. Our hit rate and our success rate in terms of the deals that we've done has partly been because of that risk profile. But we don't, you know, we're trying to allocate the cash as quickly as possible, but it's against very stringent criteria.
We walked from one in the year. We commented on that in the accounts. We got a long way down the line, but we couldn't proceed. It didn't meet all the criteria. So we are always looking, always open for business, always keen to do deals, provided we meet the, they meet the criteria. And yeah,
I think if our cash balance ever got, I don't know, north of 20 million, I think that I would have sympathy for institutions or shareholders that went, come on guys, you need to hand some of this back, and we would. But at the moment, the stuff that's on our radar, the things that are in our pipeline, I don't have any worries about allocating a good chunk of that in the short to mid-term. So,
okay, good. So an interesting pipeline by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. As we've grown, we've become increasingly well known for what we do, and we've also got seven companies that can be referenced by other companies in terms of, are these good guys, you know, are they all honourable chaps, did you get the deal you asked for? And that in itself has meant that, that deals come to us as opposed to us chasing.
That's a good point, yeah, because you know, they'll be able to see how you treated management and staff after you acquired the business and so on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then we've got a question from a chap called Welsh Eagle on ADVFN. He said he's interested in the hardware and software installations and testing. How's that developing in the USA?
Yeah. So this is RCM internationalization. It continues to grow, if you like. The background to this was 2 years ago we had no boots, or we had no customers outside of the UK. The US is a really obvious market for us. It's probably five or six times the size of the UK market. English speaking, they're probably 10 or 15 years behind us in terms of technology. In the last 12 months, we went from one to three customers, which doesn't sound like much, but people have to appreciate that the pace of change with US railroads is about the same pace as what happens in the UK, and it is pretty serious when it comes to sort of nailing software and hardware onto the tracks that monitors and interferes with signalling. So they're very, very safety conscious, and we can't really impact the speed at which they adopt technology. In the UK, it was 5 or 6 or maybe even 7 years for Network Rail to start looking at this technology, to then piloting it, and then giving significant seven-figure purchase orders to us. And I don't think it's going to be a different journey for Traxys. We're sort of 2 years into it now. We're working with three of the largest railroads in the US, and the market hasn't changed. I don't think the market will change. They will definitely move to this technology because it's a complete no-brainer. It's just a question of what the timeline is, and I unfortunately don't know what the answer to that is. Other than the UK reference point, I don't know if it will be shorter or longer. I would hope it would be shorter for various reasons, but we'll see. I'm pleased with where things are happening, but I appreciate that shareholders might be expecting it to happen faster than it is.
Okay. So, I think the other thing on that is, from what I remember of reading the broker forecasts on the train yesterday, I think that they're not factoring in overseas growth into the published forecast, are they? I don't think.
No, we haven't. Well, minimal. I mean, our forecast, I think we're now fairly well known for overperforming and, or sorry, what's the word? Underpromising. And over-delivering. And so our forecasts tend to be what we're bloody sure that we can hit. And that's, you know, forecasts tell you nothing about the future and everything about the management team. So people need to just realize that unlike so many companies that I'm sure you do know, we tend to smash our forecasts, and that's how it's going to remain.
Good. Oh, that sounds really good. So in that context, I suppose I always complain that your shares are too expensive. But given that that's based on conservative forecasts, you know, it may not be the case that they are expensive after all when you actually deliver the numbers, you know.
Well, yeah, Max and I have a lot of conversations about this. I mean, the fact that we always outperform our forecast means that our forecasting is wrong. So, I don't know, our institutions, we've got a really good strong institutional shareholder base. If you go onto our website, you can see that, you know, about 80% of Traxys is held by good blue chip institutions. We've got about a dozen of them. And they kind of like the fact, they like how we lay out our stall, and I wouldn't want to ever be talked into sort of hyping our numbers, because you know, there's no need for it. We're a good business, and we want to make sure that people don't sort of get burnt by a share price that's too hot. So,
okay. We've run over time a bit. Not that really matters, but you know, we might be starting to lose listeners. So I should probably just ask for any closing remarks that you want to make, John or Max.
No, not for me. I'll go on to Stockopedia, Paul, and I'll try and respond to some of those questions, because I do have a username and password.
Oh, brilliant!
So I'll try and pick up the ones that we've missed. But no, it was a good year, and I think that the outlook for the year ahead is good. I'm obviously in receipt of information that you don't have and I can't talk about, but I think if you're a Traxys shareholder, you should be happy about what we did, and the outlook looks good.
Good. Okay, brilliant. Well, let's wrap it up there. And thanks very much indeed for your time, gents, and hopefully speak to you this time next year.
Thanks again, Paul. Take care.
Thanks.
Cheers now. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.